After a certain amount of time of outperformance, generally the historical trend is that those things will revert back to whatever their mean performance over the long, long term has been. So we want to be a little bit careful about just saying, oh, S&P 500 has done fantastic. That's where I'm going to put all my money and just assume it's going to continue that way forever. Because eventually there will be that reversion and things will have to kind of decrease back down to a more historical trend level.
Welcome to Finance for Physicians, the show where we help physicians like you use money as a tool to live a great life. I'm your host, Daniel Wren, and I've spent the last decade advising physicians on their personal finances with the mission to help them understand that taking control of their finances now means creating a future where they can practice medicine where, when, and how long they want to. Jackie, how's it going?
Hey, Daniel, it's good to be back.
Yeah, you excited to talk about diversification?
I am excited. It's been a timely topic lately
Everybody
here. A
loves diversification. Market's a little rocky right now, which
little bit.
I guess good time to be considering or thinking about diversification.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I thought maybe we could take a little bit of a step back. Well, Jackie's been actually studying about, well, not really studying diversification, but studying for a big investment related kind of investment related tests. So she's been in the thick of all this type of stuff lately, but
Yeah, definitely in the thick of it, in the weeds.
yeah.
Gotta be true to myself as the investment nerd here.
Yeah. She's studying for the CFA, which is a very difficult, it's a particularly difficult exam in our industry. It's got three tests. She's about to take the second one. Wish her luck if you're hearing this. It's in a month, right?
Yes.
Yep.
It's getting very
You'll
real now.
well, you won't know in a month. Well, you'll know in like 2 months, maybe.
Yeah, it'll be probably another 6 to 8 weeks after that.
Yep. So we're going to talk about diversification. I'm thankful that we were able to pull her away from studying from the CFA to talk a little diversification. So,
Well, happy to be here. It's good to
yeah.
have a little break.
Yep. Okay. Well, maybe we could start out with a little bit of a explanation. So, like, what is exactly diversification?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's a term I feel like that gets thrown around a lot in our industry. So I'm sure many of our clients or our listeners here at the podcast have heard that term before, but something that not everyone understands what that jargon actually means. So at its most basic level, it's about having different types of investments, be that different asset classes or different industries within our overall portfolio. And these different asset classes and investments all perform slightly differently. So our stocks may perform differently than our bonds. They each have their own different strengths and weaknesses, so to speak, economically speaking. And even within those categories, we'll have things like junk bonds that might perform very differently from a government bond, or a large cap stock that may perform differently from a small cap value stock. So, within our portfolio as a whole, we want these different asset classes and different investments that don't all perform the same. Because that way, when there are things that cause volatility, either in the economy or in the stock market, we don't have a portfolio that is perfectly reactive to what is happening. We have things that kind of help balance out some of that volatility, smooth out those highs and lows by having those different investments.
Yeah, so the opposite of diversification would be concentration, I would say, right?
Yeah, and then especially if we wanted to get into concentration with leverage. But we're
Yeah.
not going to do that. We
For
don't need
another
to
day.
do that.
Yeah,
Next
so
up.
concentration. So maybe we could look at some specific examples of each. So, like, what would be an example of, from an investing standpoint, of an extremely concentrated strategy, like the most concentrated I could possibly get.
Most concentrated you could possibly get. Probably, I mean, investing in just a single security, not even an index like a large cap stock or S&P 500 or things like that, but instead actually putting all of your chips on one color here, just investing
Yeah.
in one single company. even more so if you applied leverage, but without even getting into that, that would probably be the highest potential for volatility, because that investment would be extremely reactive to things that are happening that relate to that company. And so your portfolio would be subjected to extreme potential highs and lows and swings based on what's happening there.
Yeah. So if I buy, well, even more, let's say I work at Apple, I work at Apple and I buy 100% of my investments go into Apple stock.
Right.
It's like ultra concentrated, because I mean, Apple's a big company. I mean, it might even be a better example if we use like a small company, although any company can go bankrupt or tank. Yeah. But
Apple is a good example too, because it's in a lot of the larger indexes in a significant portion, and you would be earning your income from there. So there's a risk to your personal cash flow, as well as in your example, if you are also investing your money into that, you're highly, highly concentrated. And then throw in, you're getting some type of employee stock option there as well, potentially.
So you're hyper concentrated right there.
Hyper Apple.
Right. So the problem with that is like, you are very dependent on, you got all your eggs in one basket. So you're extremely dependent on Apple. And so if Apple, all your apples in one basket. Yes. Perfect. You have all your apples in one basket with Apple. And if Apple has a bad run for the next 20 years before your retirement, you could be toast because of it. Or even worse, it just goes belly up. And it's a problem. So that's an extreme example. There's also maybe we could give an example of a little bit more, you know, maybe concentrated, but not ultra concentrated. Like, let's say kind of in the middle of, maybe not ultra diversified, but would be an example kind of more in the middle.
Let's say you're investing only in the S&P 500. It's still market weighted toward more of our large cap tech stocks, but it's not entirely concentrated in Apple. Mm-hmm. Specifically. So that's, I think, a little bit more of a middle ground than I think a relatively common issue that we tend to see of people who may have been managing their portfolio on their own, is they kind of look back and they see, oh, S&P 500 has done great the past decade, and they put all their money into that. Mm-hmm. And so that is slightly more diversified than the Apple example, because we do have other things in that index. But we are kind of concentrated still largely in the same industry, in the same asset class, a lot of similar types of companies there. Mm-hmm. So still a risk, still a lot more that you could do from a diversification standpoint there. Because I think what you would tend to see in, say, the S&P 500 example here, is a lot of those different pieces of the index will be highly correlated because they are so similar. So we might still
correlation. We're going with some other lingo. That's a good one.
Sorry, what was that?
We got to define the lingo. What is correlation?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the correlation is the extent to which we have stocks that move in the same direction as one another, or a stock that moves in the same direction of the index, but just that they are moving together. So if we were perfectly positively correlated, it would mean that if Apple goes up 1%, Microsoft's going to go up 1%. Yeah. Whereas if we were perfectly negatively correlated, Apple goes up 1%, Microsoft goes down 1%. So it's, are they moving in tandem in the same direction or opposite directions or somewhere in the middle? Mm-hmm. And so if we're entirely invested in one index, like the S&P 500 example, a lot of those stocks are going to be relatively similar, be pretty similarly affected by different things happening in the economy or policy-wise. And so they tend to have a pretty high correlation with one another. And that's where part of what we can do for additional diversification is trying to add in things to our investment portfolio that aren't positively correlated with those other pieces, or that are less positively correlated, so that if, say, there are big things happening in the economy that would send the S&P 500 or similar stocks decreasing, we would hope that we also have things in our portfolio that might increase when that happens, or at the very least not decrease as much. So that's where correlation really comes in and is a big piece of what we're trying to accomplish through diversification.
Yeah, the ultimate for diversification is having additional investments that behave differently at different times. Like Jackie was saying, if you just have a bunch of stuff that does the same thing in all times, it doesn't add near as much diversification benefits. So you really have to look at that.
It could provide you with some protection from company-specific risk. Again, our Apple example, if we instead have Apple and Microsoft, that's better than just Apple, because if Apple misses earnings and decreases, at least we have Microsoft. But if we have a change to interest rates or to the economy as a whole, that's probably going to affect both of them in pretty much the same way. So having the additional company there does diversify somewhat from that company specific risk we had in the Apple example, but again, still just concentrated in one asset class. So it doesn't provide very comprehensive protection to the portfolio.
I've seen a lot of concentration lately, like the example you gave in the S&P 500, mainly because the past 15 years, the S&P 500 has done so well. And so it's super tempting, I guess, to go and look at your statements or, you know, the funds that you own, look them up online or wherever, and you can see, compare them to the alternatives. And you're like, well, shoot, you guys, this S&P 500 is crushing it. And it is crushing it. The past 15 years, it's like dominant. So it's like, well, why would I not continue to own that? Why would I continue not to own it?
Yeah, no. And I think that that is something that we see among people that we work with a lot, or among podcast listeners a lot, is, you know, we look back at these returns, and really that's all we can do is look retroactively and look at the historical performance of what's happened. But we allow that to inform our current and future choices by thinking that that performance will continue to persist. And while it might, to an extent, we also have to be careful of things like mean reversion, where after a certain amount of time of outperformance, generally the historical trend is that those things will revert back to whatever their mean performance over the long, long term has been. So we want to be a little bit careful about just saying, oh, S&P 500 has done fantastic, that's where I'm going to put all my money, and just assume it's going to continue that way forever. Because eventually there will be that reversion and things will have to kind of decrease back down to a more historical trend level.
What's it say on the bottom of most of those investment closures? Is like past performance
is no guarantee of future returns.
Right. Yeah. Beware, past performance is not indicative of future results or whatever. And I mean, there's a reason they put that on there. I remember when I was starting in the industry, the flip-flop was actually happening. People were kind of heavy towards international because it had just kind of had a big run of outperforming U.S. stocks. So it's kind of interesting. But if you're looking at it from a diversification standpoint, you kind of view it a little differently. You're like, well, I need something that's going to behave a little differently so that when US eventually has a bad run, I got something that's propping me up a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And exactly like what you were just alluding to many years ago is, you know, international was having its day in the sun for a while when I think people were a little bit more hesitant about some of the US investments. And that has since flipped over the past 10, 15 years, as you mentioned earlier. But that is a reason why we want to have both in the portfolio, is because we want to make sure that when these mean reversions happen, or when things do start to flip and the tides turn on different asset classes, we want to make sure that we have a portfolio that is including those things. So we want to make sure that even right now, when the S&P 500 is up, we want to have that international portion in our portfolio as well, to be ready for when that starts to turn. And especially if we're looking, again, at just the international versus S&P 500 comparison here, if we're putting all of our money into the S&P 500 right now, prices are historically high on that because it has had such a successful run over the preceding years here. So it's not the most affordable. Yeah, it's not the most affordable, but people love to buy high. They just... Yeah. something about us. We're drawn to buying high. We don't like to buy low. We don't like to buy the thing that's been losing, quote unquote. We like to buy high, even though that doesn't make a lot of sense from a future return standpoint. And then when someday the market flips and US is performing less well relative to international, and international's high, everyone's going to want to rotate back into international and buy high over there. So you have to kind of be a little bit of a contrarian with yourself and your portfolio and think, what is more of a deal right now that I should add for diversification so that someday when the more expensive, higher performing things revert to their means, you have these other things that you bought when they were on a relative sale.
Let's take a quick break to talk about our firm, Renda Financial Planning. The goal of our podcast is to empower you to make better financial decisions. But sometimes the best financial decision you can make is to work with someone who understands your financial goals and has the expertise to keep you on track to reach them. That's where Renda Financial Planning comes in. We are a full-service financial planning firm that works with over 400 physicians and their families across the country. We charge a transparent monthly flat fee for our services and offer virtual meetings you can take from anywhere. Best of all, you'll get to work with a team that specializes in working with physician families. So whether you're starting out and wondering how you'll balance your student loan payments and saving for a home, or you are an established physician trying to figure out how to pay for your kids' college and how much you need to save to reach financial freedom, we can help. I'll put a link in the show notes to schedule a no obligation meeting with one of our certified financial planners. Ren Financial Planning, LLC is a registered investment advisor. For more information about our firm, please visit renfinancial.com. That's W-R-E-N-N-E financial.com. Yeah, ideally, you're just owning a much wider slice of what's available and not just concentrating so you can weather the storm and net results, even if it's a bad run for US or international or whatever. Yeah. Another thing that comes up sometimes is around diversification is like, okay, well, I would like to do something like invest in real estate for diversification.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you've heard that come up before.
Absolutely.
Is that a good, is there added diversification from investing in it? And a lot of times when they say that, people are thinking about buying individual properties so that they
right. So that's actually a distinction I was going to make. Real estate as an asset class absolutely can have a powerful diversifying effect to a portfolio of our more traditional stocks and bonds. Investment real estate has a pretty low correlation with things like our normal stocks and bonds. So
yeah.
It actually is a really good, powerful diversifier. That being said, as you mentioned, often when people say that, what they mean is they want to buy a rental property, for example, or want to buy some other piece of real estate, a single piece of real estate, or maybe even a couple pieces of real estate to diversify. And while that will have some level of diversification effect to the portfolio by being differently impacted by the economy than some of the stocks and bonds would, it also does run the risk of that concentration risk that we talked about earlier. Because if I'm going to take a few hundred thousand dollars and put it into a physical property, what happens when there's some sort of, I don't know, a natural disaster that affects that area? A hurricane hits my investment condo I bought, and now it's worth nothing. Versus if I had put that, say, a couple hundred thousand dollars into a REIT, a real estate investment trust, which is an exchange traded real estate product that is diversified across geography, across different industries, different companies, so has much lower concentration risk. And that just, I think, is where the major risk or pitfall comes in there, is how much are we actually concentrating there? And is there a way to diversify through that concentration? Yes, but at the higher risk of something happening to that one real estate asset you own, as opposed to spreading out what you want to invest in real estate more broadly across all of those different pieces.
Yeah, owning real estate makes a lot of sense, which is a form of diversification because it's different. It behaves differently, like Jackie was saying. Within that category, if you buy one property, that's about as concentrated as you can get, because you're saying, I want one property in one city, one location, and one type of real estate. So that's like ultra concentrated. That'd be like picking Apple stock.
It's like Apple, yeah.
Versus if you're like, well, yeah, I want to have real estate to diversify, but I'd like to the real estate that I actually own to also be diversified. So
right.
The ultimate example of that would be like the Vanguard Real Estate mm-hmm. Index or something, where that fund buys like real estate across the country in yeah. commercial and in industrial mm-hmm. and residential and like all basically forms of real estate and lending, and it covers all yep. the bases of real estate and everywhere location wise mm-hmm. and ultra diversified.
Yeah. So that's a lot more like the S&P 500 index, where we're in that industry, we're looking at real estate specifically, but we are diversified across so many different investments, as you mentioned, as opposed to the Apple example, where we bought one piece of real estate and we have to hope it does well.
This year, particularly, so as we're recording this, it's like April 23rd. Of 2025. So this year so far has been a really good example of why diversification, I think, is important, because everything's been a little bit all over the place. And I was just looking at some of these examples of some of the things we've been throwing out before we hit record today. I thought it might be good to kind of look at some of those together, because it really hits the point of why diversification makes sense. So I was looking at just looking at like Google year to date returns. Now these Google returns don't account for like dividends, so they're not the true technically correct performance of the funds, mm-hmm. but it is a good indication of like how it's doing from a pure price standpoint.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I think the numbers I'm looking at are as of like this minute, so it's like midday on the 23rd of April. So it's going to be different depending on when you actually look at them. But like the year-to-date numbers are, they're all over the place. I was looking at the U.S. total stock market. I was looking at real estate, international, emerging mm-hmm. markets, and then U.S. small company stocks.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that one's been interesting.
Yeah. Small company stocks have been the most volatile, I think. They've been, for a while they were looking good, but. What do you think is I'm not going to put you on the spot. The worst performer of all of them is small company US stocks.
Yep.
Which at this moment, it's like close to 17% down, 16.9% down, 16.92 to be exact. This is just using SLYV as the ticker, but it's a SPDR, S&P 600 small cap value ETF. But anyway, small cap has been the big loser year to date so far. Vanguard total stock market was in second place for the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is just using the Vanguard total stock market index, and it's down 8.61%. So that's a huge difference. 16% right. versus 8%. That's massive.
Yeah, that is.
And then Vanguard real estate is down. So this is a Vanguard real estate index fund ETF, and it's down 2.48%, which mm-hmm. is a huge difference. 8% versus 2%, massive difference.
Now do international.
And international, so the next one up, emerging markets, is up 1.23%. So this is a Vanguard Emerging Markets Stock Index ETF. And then the big winner, at least at this moment in time, if you look at it when you're listening to this, I bet it will be completely different. I'd be curious. It's probably going to be completely different because it changes every day. But at this point, it's the Vanguard International, which fund did I use? The Vanguard All World XUS ETF is mm-hmm. what I used as an example. So that's like kind of like bigger international developed markets, mostly companies. So it's up 6.57% for the period.
Yeah. Really powerful example here, even just right in this year, really crazy. Just in the past 4 months, about why we want to have all of these different things in the portfolio. Because if you only had the US portions of those that you mentioned, both the total stock market and then that little bit of a small cap value tilt within the US, you'd be having a significantly worse time from that gross return perspective than if you had also included the real estate and the international in there. So this year so far is really a powerful example of why we want to be including all of these different items.
Yeah, and I know you are a fan. Maybe we can wrap up with talking through this resource. I know you're a fan of the, we call it the quilt, like in our industry, a lot of financial planners love to use the quilt as like a concept to explain the concept of or benefits of diversification. So maybe you can kind of talk through what I'm talking about and maybe we can share a reference or a resource to look at if people are curious.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we can share out the link at some point, but glad we got back to it since the last time we did a podcast together. We did promise everyone someday we'd talk about it.
Yeah, we're here we are.
I know, we're back. The quilt chart, it's the Cowen quilt chart, and it's something that Cowen releases every year that details the past 10 usually years of returns among all these different asset classes. So they include our large cap, small cap, some of the things we've mentioned today, as well as the developed and emerging markets on the international front, and cash, real estate, bonds, things like that, just to really give a broad overview of how each of those asset classes performed over every individual year in the chart over that decade. So if any of the listeners here go and look that chart up, or if we're able to share out a link to it after the show here, what you'll see is that there's really not a clear pattern among them. If you look at any one of these different asset classes within the chart and you follow how it performs year to year, there really is not a clear pattern. It's not that the loser last year is always the winner next year, or that the winner always stays the winner. It is completely volatile. I mean, how these investments react to different things in their industry, in the global economy, in the domestic economy, in, you know, fiscal policy, all of them have such different reactions to these hundreds of different variables that go into how the asset classes perform. So it really is impossible to discern any pattern that you could use to predict what would happen going forward. So a very good visual, if anyone's interested, about what we're talking about with diversification and the differing returns and why we want to own the different ones. It spells out the performance here within the years of each asset class with what percentage it returned up or down in a given year. So really good to kind of illustrate some of these concepts if anyone is curious to see it more visually.
I think the easiest way to get it is just Google Cowen, C-A-L-L-E-N, periodic table of investment returns. That's what they call it. Mm-hmm. I always call it the quilt, but the Cowen periodic table of investment returns. And the website that comes up, I think it's the top one. It's the annual Cowen periodic table of investment returns. And it's just a PDF you can look at. And it shows like the visual representation of 2000. And the latest one I'm looking at is 2005 to 2024 year by year. What's funny, the year-to-date ones that are the big losers were the big winners last year.
Funny how that mean reversion hits.
Yeah, it's kind of how it goes.
So. Yep. Yeah. So I would encourage everyone who's listening to go check that out and see exactly what we were talking about here with the mean reversion and how some of those have operated last year to this year. And maybe when everyone's listening to this episode, the year-to-date returns will look completely different.
I'm sure they will. Yeah, check it out. I'd be curious. It's been very much all over the place. So.
Oh, yeah. Big swings. A lot of volatility.
Yep. Well, Jackie, good catching up. I'm glad we got to make the time to talk a little diversification and appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No guests or clients appearing on the podcast received any form of compensation for their appearance and obtained no other benefit from us. It should not be assumed that every client has had the same experience.